Back Talk is an extension of the long-running, award-winning movie review show, It's Movie Time, which airs Fridays at 4:01 and 8:01 p.m. on WCBE 90.5 FM, Columbus, Ohio. Produced and hosted by John DeSando, this podcast features additional content and banter with guests. Backtalk is listed by FeedSpot as one of the top 10 movie review podcasts on NPR.
Man, I love hearing that. I'm John DeSando.
And I'm KG Klein.
And this is Backtalk. Ken, a film called Between the Temples.
Between the Temples. That when they're referring to temples, it's a double entendre, but they're referring to Jewish temples.
All right.
And this is a very sweet, very cute Jewish comedy.
All right, good. And so the temples also play on words, the temple of the head, right?
That would be correct.
Yeah.
It's like most Jewish comedies, it's a bit neurotic.
Right.
It's a little looking inward.
It sounds like Woody Allen.
And I'm sure it has a lot of influence from Woody and the other great Jewish comedians.
And we'll talk about some of those Jewish films in our podcast.
In our podcast, yeah.
And
the role that Jewish comedy has played in cinema.
But now we have a film that most people would not even know about.
Small independent film. I'll bet the budget was less than $2 million. A couple of very good actors in this, though.
Well, you remember Asteroid City.
Asteroid City last year. We have the father playing the lead role in this.
Jason Schwartzman.
A cantor at a temple who is going through an emotional crisis period. His wife died tragically a year ago in an accident. He's lost his singing voice. And he's kind of lost himself. He's kind of lost track of what he wants out of life.
There are forces around him, including some stereotypical Jewish forces, right?
Oh, yes.
But apparently they're true. Yeah, I mean, like the overbearing mother.
Oh, gosh, yes. Oh, yeah. I mean, you would not see this stereotype in most Jewish comedies if there wasn't some truth to it.
I know that.
Jewish comedy is often a reflection on the life and growing up, and the stereotypes are all coming from real experience. I mean, they're grounded in the works of Neil Simon and Woody Allen.
Oh,
and
yes.
Mel Brooks to some extent, and there's a consistency to the way they portray the Jewish mother. The Jewish family, the neurosis. They treat being Jewish almost as if it is a neurological disease.
Well, now, did you go through any of this? Was your family?
No, I come from a very different angle. I was adopted into a Catholic family, and it was only later in life that I learned of my Jewish background.
Oh, okay.
And I'm a Norwegian Jew and try to find another
one
of those.
Yes, I am.
Yeah, there's only about 1,800 of us in the whole world, so we have a very different take on it. Also, I am a Reformed Jew, which means that I look at the world very differently than, say, an Orthodox Jew would. An Orthodox Jew is going to be much more traditional, much more grounded, whereas a Reformed Jew is going to be a little bit more liberal. We were the first ones to allow same-sex marriage. We were the first ones to allow bat mitzvahs for women. We're very progressive, and when these progressive moments happen, it usually comes through the Reform movement.
Our lead female here, Carol Kane, doing a great job of being the older woman in this.
She's probably the most challenging role in this. She's about 17 years, I would estimate, older than Schwartzman in this movie.
Okay.
And there's sort of a Harold and Maude kind of thing going on here. It's a May-December relationship. But is it even a relationship? She has lost her husband years ago. And she just bumps into the boy that she had taught music to in middle school and decides, I want my bat mitzvah. And then just to be clear to the audience, a bat mitzvah is when a woman has a bar mitzvah. When a man has it, it's a bar mitzvah. When a woman has it, it's a bat mitzvah.
Now, usually she has it at age 13.
Usually everybody has it at age 13, unless they're a convert. If they've converted later in life, they can have it at any age. But this film is very timely in as much as this is something that is going on within the Jewish community right now. A woman who was born before 1970 probably did not have a bat mitzvah. That really did not become a thing until the early 80s. It started in the Reform movement that worked its way up through the conservative Jewish temples. If somebody was 13 in the 70s or the 60s, they would not probably have had a bat mitzvah.
Yeah.
So she decides, just kind of out of the blue, she's a little strange.
Her parents were communist Jews, so that means that she was not allowed.
I don't know what that means. I've never heard the term communist Jew in my life. I never heard
apparently
it.
That's the reason she wasn't allowed. to have it.
If that's really a thing. I'm going to put a question mark behind that. That may be something created for this film. I've never, in years of going to Temple, I have never heard the term communist Jew.
Well, one of the things that I like about Between the Temples is that it's not heavily Jewish. Now, by that I mean we're very much aware that this is the climate and the culture that we are in. But it is as much about the reverse in our own culture that is you have an older woman and a younger man.
Yeah.
And this is becoming more acceptable. And with the population shifts, it may happen even more. But for young, healthy males in the American culture, for instance, this is a bit odd.
Yeah, he's probably in his late 30s, and she's probably in her early 60s.
Yes.
So it's an interesting thing. But the other thing about this movie is it's very hard to define when or if it ever really is a relationship. She is learning from him. He's teaching her, but there's a connection. She provides a healing quality to him that he desperately needs, and he provides a sense of purpose to her that she didn't have. She had been laid off a year earlier after 42 years as a music teacher and was hitting the bars and wandering aimlessly, and she gave him something to focus upon. And you also get the impression that he likes to be a supporter. He likes to be the person who helps somebody else. He never really seems to think much of himself, and she desperately needs some help. She needs him, and he needs somebody to need him.
One of the interesting romantic parts of this is that he is a very fetching young woman who is the daughter of the rabbi.
Now, rabbi's daughter.
Jews, this has got to be just for heaven.
Well, and he's the cantor. Mothers, he has two mothers, are probably the top donors to the temple.
Yes.
So they're prominent people. And the rabbi's daughter comes back from being stood up at the altar, we get. And she is quite attractive.
Oh, I like her a lot. Madeline Weinstein, I think, is her name.
Yes.
And I really would look forward to seeing her again.
I would, too.
She has a purity about her.
She's very genuine.
Yes.
She can do comedy.
And she's a wonderful-looking woman.
One of the points of disbelief in this movie is I wonder why he just was not drawn to her immediately and what he can possibly see in this much older woman that makes him go that direction instead of towards Gabby, the rabbi's daughter.
Well, Carla, the older woman in this, expresses thematically for me the best of anybody in this film. She says to him, I taught you, you now teach me.
Yeah.
So there's a teaching going on between the generations that I think that works in this film.
And I also do wonder whether she sensed that he needed a purpose at this point in his life. And that just went well for both of them because she wanted her bat mitzvah, just decided abruptly, I want my bat mitzvah. But I think she also sensed that he needed somebody to focus on because she picked him. She said, I want you to prepare me for my bat mitzvah, which would be a one-year-long process. So she enabled him to have a purpose that he didn't have when she found him.
This film is worth seeing for the feast.
Shabbat.
Yeah.
It has the most amazing dinner scene I think I may have ever seen in the movie.
Me too, I agree.
It goes on and on. It's probably about 20 minutes long.
Oh.
And as the storyline disintegrates before our eyes, it's almost you have to almost turn away. Because you just watch the connections all suddenly falling apart.
Oh,
the rabbi's there with his daughter thinking that this meal is the setup for the relationship with the cantor. The mothers are there thinking the same thing.
Yeah.
The Gabby is there thinking that this is the moment when he's going to announce that he wants to start dating her, going steady with her. The music teacher was invited. She doesn't even know why she's there. She's just very happy to be there. And then everything just falls apart.
I'll tell you what I really noticed that I love the close-ups.
Oh, yeah.
There were tight shots all over the place.
Practically the whole movie is close-up.
I know.
Yes.
And this feast, Nathan Silver, the name of the director, he did something called The Great Pretender. I don't know. That's the only thing I know of.
Okay.
He did. But he's in charge, regardless of who edits and so on, and regardless of the cinematographer. It's his call, and he's calling for close-ups to the extent that I've never seen it before, but it really made me feel like I was a part of it.
It's very claustrophobic.
Yeah.
They're all huddled around this one dining table, lots of people. They all think that they're there for one reason, and then suddenly it just all goes left.
A variation of the what would we call it, things are not what they seem theme. Well, Ken, we're at the point that everybody has been waiting for, and that is other Jewish films besides this one, which is called Between the Temples.
Well, Jewish cinema is as wide open and as broad as any other form of cinema. When we say Jewish cinema, we're not talking about one thing. There's every possible thing from science fiction to Jewish westerns to everything you can think of. But if there's one area of cinema where Jewish cinema seems to really excel, it's comedy. The Jewish comedies are so ingrained in our understanding of American cinema that they're a thing unto themselves. And they start with, of course, the person that probably really set the foundation was Neil Simon. Mm-hmm. And Neil Simon, starting in the early 60s with movies like The Apartment, Barefoot in the Park, The Odd Couple, and his specialty was writing farce, almost writing situation comedies, yeah. Which is why The Odd Couple transitioned so easily into a television show. It was a situation comedy to start with. And he was brilliant. Variety once said he owned Broadway at a time when Broadway was worth owning, and before the days of Andrew Lloyd Webber and Les Miserables and the big spectacles. And his shows, though, were not really about being Jewish, but he was writing about living in Manhattan. Common theme was the difficulty getting an apartment. We saw that in The Odd Couple. We saw that in Barefoot in the Park. Yeah. We saw that in The Goodbye Girl.
Yeah, more Jewishness in The Odd Couple.
Yes.
Where you get more of the characteristics out there, and they're playing it for comedy. Now, let me ask you this. How, then, do you fit Fableman?
Fableman's interesting.
Because it's not really a comedy, although it has comedic elements.
It has some funny elements, but definitely not a comedy, and certainly doesn't fit into the classic Jewish comedy.
Right. And nor does Steven Spielberg seem to fit into the classic Jewish director.
What he's really doing with Fableman's is he's doing a biopic. He's doing his own life story. You get some of the fact that he was a Jewish family. He got beat up in school for being Jewish. But really, I would not say that that was a Jewish theme movie.
All right.
The director who really, after Neil Simon introduced the structure, the second one who really brought Jewish characters into our psyche was Woody Allen. Woody Allen is the person who created the idea of the neurotic Jew.
That's right.
And I can say that because he's not that far off the mark. When you go into Temple, you meet people and you go, oh my God, he's just like Woody Allen. Grounded in reality. And you know, he comes into the scene in the late 60s with movies like Sleeper, Take the Money and Run, later Annie Hall, you know, huge, huge films. And these are all based on Jewish characters and the rapport and and this is really the element that sets the stage for what we know as Jewish comedy today.
Well, you are an accomplished actor, and so you probably have a better feel for Fiddler as Jewish.
Oh, well, Fiddler is the classic Jewish musical.
Right.
I mean, absolutely. You're not going to see a show that's produced more, Jewish show produced more than Fiddler, except once in a while, the producer sneaks in there.
Oh.
And now we're on to Mel Brooks. Woody Allen did satire. Mel Brooks does parody. Very different. They could not be more different in style.
Good point.
But Mel Brooks is not afraid to make fun of being Jewish. If you're Jewish, making fun of being Jewish, being very self-effacing, is one of the cliches. And then through movies like Blazing Saddles and The Producers, of course, and The Producers is still a hot topic within Jewish communities. There are people that absolutely love The Producers and will go to every show, and there are Jews who will never be caught dead in that audience because of the depiction of him. Hitler and the depiction of World War II.
Well,
Mel Brooks can pull this off.
Oh, he can. Now, but tell me, how do you fit Life is Beautiful?
Why?
Which is really an odd movie to me.
Yeah.
It's making fun of the Holocaust, and we're not, this is not a show where you want to feature the Holocaust. We're looking at lighthearted.
Yeah.
And there's an awful lot of lighthearted in Life is Beautiful.
Very controversial film.
Totally a different.
And I would say that film played better to Gentile audiences than it did within the Jewish community.
I think you're right.
Yeah. Now, one that did play very well within the Jewish community, and personally is one of my favorite movies, is Jojo Rabbit.
Oh, very good.
Great, great film. Yeah. The depiction of the Jewish girl in that, I think, is fantastic. And even though Hitler is portrayed in the movie by Watiki himself,
yes,
it is such an over-the-top portrayal.
Yes.
The character of the kid is such a vulnerable character swept up in this in the Hitler mania that I think the movie does itself very well within the Jewish community.
It strikes me that this movie, which is probably better known by anyone besides Fiddler, The Diary of Anne Frank.
Well, yes. I mean, that, when you're talking about Jewish theater, that's one of the cornerstones of theater, period.
But
really, if you're going to pick one play that sums up the Holocaust, it's going to be The Diary of Anne Frank.
But as far as being Jewish, and I know I'm separating Holocaust from Jewish as Jewish culture as opposed to the horrific.
It's about this small group of people trying to maintain their values, trying to maintain Jewish values, the belief in the tolerance of all people, of all things, of doing good for the world. Because remember, Jews don't believe in heaven and hell. We believe in doing good here. This here right now is your opportunity to make a difference, not something that you're going to do once you die. And that is all instilled in Diary of Anne Frank. It comes down to that pivotal moment when Anne says, I still believe that people are fundamentally good.
Good. Fit for me in our discussion of the variety of Jewish films about Jews. Fit Driving Miss Daisy.
Oh, okay. Driving Miss Daisy, very, very great play, turned into a wonderful movie.
But not often thought about it as having a Jewish element.
Well, it does have a Jewish element because, of course, Miss Daisy is a wealthy Jewish woman.
Yeah.
In some ways, she's kind of a stereotype. They do humanize her. Wasn't necessary, I think, for her to be Jewish, but she is.
Right, yeah.
Yeah, she fills the role as the affluent, entitled person against the chauffeur.
Right, and it's more about the black chauffeur.
Yes.
Than
absolutely.
About the Jewish
lady.
I'm saying, well, by gosh, yes.
Yeah, and important to remember that was not written by a Jewish playwright. But you know, when we talk about the plays that come from Jewish playwrights and the movies that come from Jewish filmmakers, I think that many of them are based on the works of either Neil Simon, Woody Allen, or Mel Brooks. Those are the three that really resonate. And personally, I don't think without Neil Simon, you would have had situation comedies as we know them today. He opened the door for Norman Lear and Bud Yorkin to create All in the Family, Good Times, The Jeffersons, Maude. And even it resonates down the line to Seinfeld, Sex and the City, Friends. All of those go back to his portrayal of life in Manhattan.
Or at least was my first recognition that a prominent playwright could play with the Jewish motif, Bill Shakespeare.
Oh, well, yes. Well, we still struggle with Merchant of Venice. I mean, that's one of his problem plays. It's an anti-Semitic play. We know it's an anti-Semitic play.
Isn't that amazing?
It gets done. Usually there's now a cautionary word before the play starts.
That's right.
Saying this obviously is not the values of the theater company, but a tremendous play.
He picked
just
on the stereotype.
Well, he picked on the stereotype of his era, which we're talking around 1600.
Yeah.
When Jewish merchants controlled a great deal of the trade and the buying and selling of goods.
Yes.
And it was not a good time for Jews. Jews were persecuted during this time as being too influential in the community as far as the buying and selling of things.
Well,
there's the last line of that play when they force the merchant to convert to Christianity is, you know, it still gets acted out because it's there,
but you know,
you grit your teeth and you get through it as quick as you can.
K.G. Klein, I have at least 20 of here, and I know you have about 100 in your head, and we can't possibly get to them all. We tried to pick off the more lighthearted ones. I didn't bother to say anything about The Boy in the Striped Pajamas, Triumph of the Will, or anything that has related to Jews that's too much of the greatest tragedy in Western civilization, I believe, the Holocaust. So here we have a film that you liked and I really loved with Jason Schwartzman called Between the Temples. Ken, what are you suggesting to our audience? This is really very specialized.
Okay, well, I want to pick out three Jewish comedies that I want.
You're going to let it go.
I'm not going to let go. I want my audience, I want those of you out here, if you haven't seen these three films, see these three films. First one is Woody Allen's Take the Money and Run.
Okay.
One of Woody Allen's best films, very overlooked. It was early in his career. atmosphere. It's filmed in black and white. It's absolutely hysterical. Another film is, of course, watch the original Mel Brooks, Gene Wilder, The Producers.
Okay, right.
Great, great, great film. Yeah. I can't say enough. Yeah. And the last one is Jojo Rabbit. If you haven't seen Jojo Rabbit, take the opportunity to see it. It's a great film.
A very eccentric film, but he gets away with it.
Yes, yeah, and he excels.
People are always appalled that he's satirizing Hitler. People don't even want to talk about Hitler.
But it works.
I know it does.
It works.
I know. So it's called Between the Temples. And if you want something light but culturally meaningful, to take yourself out up to a big screen and enjoy these very talented actors and director in a film that your friends will thank you for, because believe me, they will not be looking for this.